Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Contract Revolution. This is your host, Benji, and my guest on the show today is Ron Tight, best-selling author, speaker, producer, and entrepreneur. His creative agency, Church and State, does everything from brand strategy to advertising to customer journey mapping and beyond for some of the biggest brands in the world. Google, Microsoft, Walmart, Manulife, the list goes on. In addition, he was also named one of the top 10 creative Canadians by Marketing Magazine. Accolades aside, it's Ron's new book that piqued my interest the most. It's called Think, Do, Say: How to Seize Attention and Build Trust in a Busy, Busy World. And the main idea is this: you listening own a brand that makes promises, I hope. Now, those promises are executed by one department in your organization, and then those delivered promises are packaged up and broadcast to the world by yet another department of your business. And along that factory line, it's actually pretty common for some broken telephone to crop up. So how do you clarify your brand beliefs, align your team, and talk about that to your broader audience in a way that is clear, concise, and meaningful? Let's listen to find out.
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, where we unpack the systems, tactics, and skills you need to take your fast-growing contracting business to the next level.
If you're here to learn what it takes to scale up, work less, and increase profitability, you've come to the right place.
Stay tuned to learn what separates the new breed of contractor from the old school, and welcome to your ultimate guide on the business of contracting.
Ron Tight, welcome to the Contractor Evolution Show. It's really good to have you, my man. How are you?
Thanks, Benji. I'm pretty good. I mean, summer's almost here, you know? I mean, yeah, life is great.
Good, man. Listen, I'm really interested in the work that you guys do. I want you to just, for the audience, for the sake of context and knowing a little bit about the body of work that you have, can you tell us about Church and State? Can you tell us about the work that you guys do and even some of the brands that you work with?
Yeah. So I own an agency called Church and State, and it is a, I was a executive creative director at a large international firm. And I was like, who wants to be that? And I mean, no, I want to be an owner operator here. I thought that agencies should do things in a certain way to meet the changing needs of both clients and consumers. And so I started Church and State. So we're a small specialized agency. We're located in Toronto, but we have clients all over the country and all over North America. And what we do is we apply an operating system approach to brands. That look, at the end of the day, people used to vote with their wallets, and now they vote with their time. And so we help brands win that battle for time. And so whether it's a big brand like Google or Walmart, those are clients, or really small brands. We work with individual thought leaders, and we work with CEOs on their branding. We work with startup organizations. And it's really just about how do we build brand conviction by creating communications that win the battle for time, that are relevant enough and interesting enough and timely enough to stop people in their tracks and make them listen.
So this this conversation, we're going to get it. I love that term. It's like a brand operating system. I want to get into the nuts and bolts of it. And it is captured really well in this book that you've written called Think, Do, Say, which I will link somewhere below. And I'd highly recommend some of you brand nerd listeners go give this a read.
But we'll get 10% commission for every book we sell. 10%.
Cut me in, bro. Get me in. Okay. I got to just a couple practical questions here right at the outset. Sure. Look, there are some economic headwinds right now. I think more so in Canada than the US, but there's reason for some cautious fear. I'm not a doom and gloomer. I'm not, going to go and live under my bed. But there are some, we've got inflation, we've got major housing crisis here in Canada. We've got much tighter budgets, and it looks like less spending, specifically in this space, compared to a couple of years ago. And that's I can see that in the data that we look at, and it's also very anecdotal and subjective in the sense that I'm hearing that from our members almost on a daily basis. Leads are down a little bit, sales are down a little bit. So with all that said, like in your world, which is different than our worlds, but there's going to be a lot of overlap. How are advertisers, bigger advertisers, responding to that? And is there anything for this like more contractor audience to learn there?
Well, I think, yes, that there are the smart ones know that they continue to spend and they use the time. They turn what they have into an advantage given the environment that they're in. So this is no surprise to anybody. At least it shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be.
In most businesses, especially in, let's just call it broader real estate, whether that is acquisitions or renovations or home services, there's a seasonality to it. It just so happens to be kind of a 10-year seasonality. We know that every 10 years, like, things are going to kind of go into the gutter a little bit and they're going to come back. Like, we know what happens. We know how governments and central banks respond, all of those things. It's a 10-year seasonality. And so we know that when the times are great, you do certain things. And when the times aren't so great, you do certain things. But they should not be unexpected. Something like a pandemic, sure, completely unexpected. But high interest rates, inflation, those things are unexpected. What we find is that what leaders are coming to us is they haven't thought about that seasonality. And so they go, I want to do the right thing. I just don't know what the right thing is. Mm-hmm. Like, where do I really kind of focus? And we can't just respond to the economic reality. That's a big one. But there are about 10 other big, massive things happening beyond the economy. There's a large geopolitical crisis that's happening that is going to, you know, potentially have an even broader and deeper effect on interest rates and inflation and pricing and everything else. And so we have to kind of consider that. We have an environmental thing that's going on, and people are just waiting for, you know, the next big environmental disaster. We have this battle for human rights where now suddenly businesses are expected to solve all of the world's problems, right. You know, be it equality or sustainability, whatever it is. So there's a bunch of stuff going on. And what we need is to take a step back and go, okay, how do we respond to changes in the environment that we're a part of? That's why we think when the inputs are chaotic and ever changing, what you need is a consistent operating system that you go back to time and time again. That's why we do what we do.
You'd said something a minute ago. You're like, the smart ones keep spending. And I think what you're alluding to is this sort of fork in the road that a lot of business owners and operators find themselves in when things are getting a little bit tighter. And I'm going to make this incredibly simplistic. And I want you to answer this with your bias as an advertiser. One is, hey, things are down. I'm going to cut my spend on marketing. We're going to decrease our ad spend by 70%. We're not going to deploy resources on this because they're working less effectively and we got to, you know, stay, it's protectionist in a way. And then the other is I'm going to triple down right now because I think I can get this stuff for cheaper and I see an opportunity. How do you think about that as a business owner? How do you coach your businesses that you work with to think about that fork in the road?
I think about it this way. Now, I don't, you know, Benji, I don't want you to think I'm better than you or any of your listeners, but just so you know, I was raised in a very exclusive seaside community called Oshawa, Ontario.
Yeah. Up there. That's a silver spoon.
The Schwiggity.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Schwiggity. I know the car world because I live down the street from the largest General Motors plant in the country. I know cars. I was the creative director on Volvo. I know racing. I know all that stuff. This is the metaphor that will help your listeners out. In a professional car race, there are only two ways that you can win a race. Now, everybody thinks, you know, in the straightaway, when times are good, that's the straightaway. And it's really easy to win in the straightaway. It is ridiculously easy to win in the straightaway. You put the pedal to the metal. You put the pedal as fast as you can go. And whoever built the fastest engine 6 months before the race, they're the ones that win. So that's what you do. But what I also know, you can't win a race in the straightaway. No race is ever won in the straightaway. Races are won in two places. They're won in the pits and they're won in the corners. So in the pits, You win the races in the pits by having a clear system, by having people who are have very defined and specific roles, who are trained to do what you need them to do, who are empowered to do what you need them to do. And when it comes time for them to shine, be it a bricklayer or somebody who's in payroll, they hit it out of the park every single time. So you need that. You need people who can do the thing you are paying them to do in the most efficient way possible. The second place you can win a car race is in the corner. And this is when, if you consider this weird place in the economy as a corner, then so be it. So what happens in the corner? The first thing a driver does as they enter the corner is they realize they're not in the straightaway anymore. This is when the pros show up, because anybody can gun it. But when you enter the corner, this is when the pros show up. Because the first thing they do is they slow the car down. They go, okay, let's just take a second. Let's just get some indicators as to where we are. Like, how bad is this? Like, how steep is this corner? How tight of a turn is this? Are we losing everything? Are we losing all of our projects? Like, what is happening? Let's just get the lay of the land. Now, once they have that and they slow the car down and they gain control, then what do? They do not wait for the corner to end. The way you win a race in a car race is you accelerate in the middle of a corner. That's how you win. And you accelerate in the middle of the corner as soon as you gain control. Now you accelerate so that by the time the corner ends, you leave the corner with great acceleration and great momentum. If you wait until the corner's over, you're done. Because everybody who invested in the downturn, everybody who invested in the corner, they're lapping you. And so if you think, hey, times are tough, this is the time to stop spending. And by the way, spending doesn't have to be an outlay of money. Like, it does in our world, like they have to buy media. But spending can be energy. It could be like taking a look at your business and investing in tools to make you more efficient. It can be taking some time so that ensuring that your people are trained and developed. It can be bringing in new software. It could be revising your mission statement, like blah, 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 blah. All those sorts of things so that by the time the business returns, you are set up to kill it. So go, 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 go. That happens in the middle of the corner.
That's one of the best analogies I've heard on the podcast. I love it. It's an extremely compelling visual. And I'm reminded, as some of my listeners know, one of my big passions in life is motorcycle riding. I've done a lot of riding for a young guy. I rode to South America. I've gone all over Canada. It's my jam. And, there's a two-wheel equivalent of that, which is if you're looking at a really good bend and you come into it and you lose confidence at the apex of the corner, and instead of like looking where you want to go, hitting the corner hard and accelerating out of it, you basically panic, hit the brakes, try to get your bike upright so that you can kind of slow down. You will go straight into the ditch. And as a younger rider, I have done that a couple times.
Painful.
It's very painful. And I love this whole idea of just staying locked in, staying in the pocket, and really having a more aggressive or opportunistic, capitalistic mindset in moments like this. I have a question for you about brand building in general I want to get to, but first we got to talk about wardrobe, okay? So I got a message from Cooper and Janelle Leary of CLS. This is whose outfit I'm wearing today. They do landscaping and landscape supply in Calgary, hardscape solutions. They own and operate it in Calgary, Alberta and surrounding area. This is a message from Cooper I got this morning. We've been a member for 4.5 years. And in that time, we have grown from 5 million to 15 million in revenue. Way to go, guys. Biggest thing that has helped us from Breakthrough Academy is rigorous financial analysis and forecasting and budgeting. The MBP file, which, by the way, that's sort of our proprietary financial tracker that we install into all the businesses we coach, is reason enough to be such a part, to be part of such a powerful tool. And the community that surrounds the group of business members is insane in the amount of talent and intelligence that I am exposed to. Cooper and Janelle, thank you for the outfit. Really appreciate you guys. Listen, if you are a listener of the show and you're growing your business and you're in construction, painting, landscaping, roofing, a home service, whatever, and you want to grow faster, that's what we do. We systemize contracting businesses for growth. There's a link below that you can click on to learn more about us. And that's all I got to say about that. So, Ron, brand building, big businesses versus small businesses. What is different about these two environments and going through brand building as an exercise for a big business, for a small business? What's different? And then what is fundamentally the same?
Well, the approach should be the same. The approach should be the same. And the goals should be the same, which is brand conviction and a business that lasts. I think far too often that there are enterprise organizations and owner-operator, you know, kind of businesses who think that marketing isn't about a long-term play, that it's a short-term play, that it's about short-term tactics, it's about getting short-term views, it's about going viral. No, it's about staying in business over the long haul, and that requires patience, and that requires consistency, and that requires commitment. So that's what's the same. Now, what's different is that they are very different, but you know, and in large organizations, what they can do that a smaller organization can't do is they can scale experience. They can scale experience from an infrastructure standpoint. They have the infrastructure to grow and deliver in a really, really fast way. So if they get a unique, you know, project that kind of comes in, they can go, we can just throw resources at it and we've got everything in place to do it. What's more difficult for them is the authenticity and consistency of experience. So if you look at it this way, these are the types of organizations that do really, really well. Mm-hmm. They are organizations that are big enough to deliver and small enough to care. So, and that's an old Allstream tagline. But that's the reality, that businesses that are big enough to deliver and small enough to care. So they're big enough to deliver. Because if I've got somebody who's coming over to, you know, underpin my basement, I need to know that they can do that. I need to know that they're big enough, that they've probably got some insurance, that they've done this before, that they have the right tools, they have the right process. Like, I'm about to spend a few $100,000. I need somebody who can do that job and probably be able to do another one at the same time, because that's the realities of business. Mm-hmm. I don't want someone coming over with a shovel. Mm-hmm. Like, so we need a business to be big enough to deliver. And they go, okay, they know what they're doing. They got this. At the same time, what often happens is the people who are big enough to deliver lose all authenticity. And what they lose is a sense of personality. They become really scripted. And, you know, there's another metaphor for you, if you want to look at it this way. If you look at Times Square in New York, great place. Times Square is designed for eyeballs, right? The whole thing, 400,000 people traipse through Times Square every single day. 400,000 people. The whole ecosystem is designed to sell ads for those eyeballs. Now, there's two parts to Times Square. Up top of Times Square, those are the big brands. Those are big, expensive, that's a big, expensive billboard to be on. And because of that, because they're spending so much money on the space, they're a little bit too protective about the process and about the creative. So it's really scripted. It's potentially, it's not that unique. And they're further removed from the reality of the street.
Yeah, I mean, because you can picture your typical, like, you know, I can think of it, of the Coca-Cola ad that's running on the big billboard that's like, it's high gloss, it's colors. I'm sure there's some movement going on. I'm sure they've hit their diversity quota. I'm sure, like, you can, but you're kind of like, oh, okay, cool. Like, whatever. Like, I can totally get the archetypal creative that's probably running in that slot.
Yeah. And it's designed for everybody because you can't touch it, you can't go around. Now on the street, that's a completely different level of business down there. Because that person who's giving away those flyers, they could be more targeted, they could be more customized, they could be more aggressive, right? So that when you get a brand message from a very huge construction company, a global construction company, that's had 8 levels of approvals, it's been printed 4 million at a time. Opposed to if you get an individual plumber who comes to you, they see who you are. They can customize their message for you, the human being. So it's way more targeted. It's way more customized. You care more.
Right.
Because you can care more.
Right.
And so it's how do you do that and show the care for that individual customer while at the same time communicating, like you can trust me on this. Mm-hmm. The end of the day, the Canadian consumer they don't know where to look and they don't know who to trust. They're being bombarded from every possible angle. Do you know any people who ring my doorbell offering to do some sort of home service? here.
Yeah, a lot.
Where there's guys who can, like, you know, wash my porch to, I'll fix your awning to, I'll pave your driveway to, I'll weed your lawn. Like, it's nonstop. I don't know where to look. I don't know who to trust.
Can you talk a little bit about just like the why behind this think, do, say framework? Like what, you know, you've obviously thought about this and implemented this into your own business, into other businesses a lot. And you wrote a book about it. And I think you do, you know, keynotes about this. This is something you spent some time on. Where did it come from? And fundamentally, what's the problem it's trying to solve?
The problem it's trying to solve is that we need a consistent operating system to approach marketing and branding and businesses that is simple because all the inputs to it are not. So we need a simple approach to be flexible enough to deal with the chaotic reality that's around us. And where it came from is I was getting sick and tired of like working with these brands. And there was always another thing to add on. Like it started with, well, this is our mission. I'm like, oh, okay, you got a mission. Great. But that's different from our vision. Okay, you got a vision too. We have a North Star. Oh, great, you got a North Star. We have a brand purpose. Oh, you have a purpose too. We have a brand belief. Oh, you got that. We have a positioning statement. Like it just went on and on. And all it did was it was just a bunch of MBAs talking to one another, making it increasingly academic.
Yeah.
And what that did, when you do that, is it when you clutter up, it's not the message to your customers, because you can write a tagline and all that, right? Like it's not that message, it's the message to your people. Mm. And that if I'm a contractor. And I want to bring in somebody who's a bricklayer. If I want to bring in a drywall guy, well, then I'm going to go, hey, these are the expectations of my organization. Like, you need to know a little bit about me so that you can behave in a way that's consistent. And I'm not going to go, and here's our BHAG, and here's our North Star, and here's our mission, and here's it. So it was like we needed to simplify it because I talked to frontline employees. I did this tour in Western Canada. With a bunch of grocery store cashiers, deli clerks, and gas station attendants.
Yeah.
I did like 25 cities. And every time you'd talk to those people, they'd go like, yeah, I know what the thing is, but I don't know. Like, I mean, I kind of know what it means, but I don't know what role I play in it. So that was why I wanted to write the book. How do we do something where people can articulate what their organization fundamentally believes in. So that belief could then inform what they should do. And then how do they talk about it in a way that other people want to join them?
Okay, so let's do this then. I think the best way to explore this is let's pretend like we own a hypothetical plumbing company and we want to implement the think, do, say framework into our business. And I'm just going to hand you the mic and you kind of go through this in a very stream of consciousness fashion, starting with the think section and interesting stuff you say, I'll ask you about, and we'll just work our way through this and hopefully make kind of a logical narrative where someone goes, oh, this is a cleaner pathway than core values, a mission statement, a painted picture, company DNA of blah, 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 which is like, I get, dude, it's getting exhausting at a certain point. It's like PowerPoints about PowerPoints about PowerPoints. Points. It's like, what are we doing, guys? So, okay, I love it. Dive in, talk out, just start with the think section.
Okay. So the think section, the first thing you need to do is take a look at the world around you. Like what is happening in the world? Okay. So the think section, I'll spend the most time on this because the think section is A, what do you fundamentally believe in? And that belief has to be grounded in where you make your money. And it has to be grounded in a business opportunity before you. Now, what I mean by that, a lot of organizations are like, what do we believe? We believe in saving the planet.
Yeah,
you're
No,
you sell crackers. Yeah, you don't believe in saving the planet. That's ridiculous. It has to be tied to where you make your money. So if I'm a plumber, I got to go, what's going on in the world that would affect what I believe? Okay, off the top of my head, what's happening? First thing, people are they are so hurt for time. Like parents at home are really craving more time. They're behind the eight ball. Secondly, more people are working from home. Okay, so more people are working from home. That's a big thing that's having an indirect effect on maybe how and when they want people to come in. They have greater needs at home during the day because they're at home all day. People are getting married later. Like, I don't know. And real estate prices are going through the roof. So people want to do more, interest rates are going through the roof. So they want to renovate. So there's three big trends going on in the world. Then you go, what's happening with consumers in their view of plumbing with all those things in mind? Man, you know what people are sick of? They're sick of plumbers who are saying, I'll be there sometime between 9 o'clock and never.
Right.
Like they can't handle that because their work day, they got meetings. They're not just hanging around at home. So somebody goes, my personal values as a plumber matched with the reality that's happening out there is that I believe that the best type of plumber is the plumber that's on time. There you go. Mm-hmm. There's a fundamental belief. And that's different from the person who says, I believe the plumber should use the most expensive supplies going.
What?
So you go.
Sorry, go ahead.
So that's their belief. I believe plumbers should be on time. There you go. That's a belief.
Why is it important to pay attention to the broader context? You sort of mentioned what's going on in the world right now. You're looking at macro trends. You're looking at what the algorithm is pushing up and down, I'm sure on some level what's going on politically, what's going on demographically. I mean, why is paying attention to that important when you're trying to formulate your own brand beliefs?
Because we can get a little too close and too narrow focused on our own business and not see things that are coming. So, you know, the world of work is not just changing the way people interact with their bosses, that we're redefining work in a completely different way. And that is having indirect ramifications on every single business around. So I use that example of like, look, I had somebody coming yesterday to deliver and install a natural gas barbecue. Mm. And they're like, ding dong. They're like, all right, we're just going to take our time. And I go, I'm in a meeting.
Yeah.
I'm downstairs. I'm literally with a client right now. You got to go. Let's go. Can you let yourself out the back? Like all of that.
Yeah.
So how people are working are now changing the way they interact with service providers in their home, because the home isn't just a home anymore. It's a huge office for people. And if you don't look at it that way, and without looking at the broader world, you may not see those direct implications to your business that you've never thought of before.
Are there steps that you encourage small business owners to sort of follow to come to their own, like when if they're in this think section, they're trying to come up with a brand belief. Are there steps that you, an exercise, like how do they workshop it? Do they start by asking in their team? Do they throw some stuff on a whiteboard and then cross out the stuff that sounds dumb? Like I love concrete steps. And this is, as you know, a very pragmatic group. So like what's sort of the beginner's guide to figuring this out?
Totally. I will explain this. You look at the broader, first thing, you start with those big macro trends, okay? Second thing, we're going to do a deep dive on the target. Who is our target? Where is our most profitable target? Where is the biggest opportunity? And what do we know about that person? So if you're a plumber and you're like, you know what? I'm a condo guy because I know condos, my target, specifically in condos. That's what I really like. Okay, that's your target. What do we know about them? What are they looking for? What do they want you to do? So that's the target. Secondly, we look at the category. Who are they competing against? Who are you competing against? And I don't just mean other plumbers. Where are they going to get information on how to find a plumber?
Right.
Because guess what? You're competing against TikTok. You're competing against somebody. And here, I'll give you a perfect example. My wife, one of the most beautiful, loving people on the planet, said to me, our dishwasher's broken. Or there's a part in our dishwasher that's broken. And I said, looks like we're getting a new dishwasher.
Right.
And she goes, no, idiot. I ordered the part on Amazon and I watched a YouTube video on how to fix it.
Right. Wow.
And so she fixed it. So you're not competing just against other plumbers. You're competing against the internet, because that's where people are going to find information, both on where to find plumbers, but also maybe how to fix it themselves. So one, who's the target? Secondly, Who are you competing against? Thirdly, what's the legacy of this brand? So if the legacy of this brand is that you inherited the business from your parents, that has a, you know, then you, now you have a legacy to your business that maybe other people don't. What else do we know about this brand? What are you known for? What are your colors? What are you, what's your name? All that kind of stuff. So now you take those three things, you plot them out. Come up with a summary line for each one. This is what we know about the target. This is what we know about the category. This is what we know about the brand. Now, you then map out three things. What I call your brand relevance, your brand difference, and your brand opportunity. The brand relevance is the overlap between the target and the brand. This is what the target wants, and this is what you deliver. The target wants somebody in the neighborhood. You're in their neighborhood. That's why you're relevant to them. So you cannot lose that. You got to protect that. This is why you're relevant to people. It's because you're cheap. It's because you're expensive. It's because you have a great wardrobe, whatever it is. So that's your brand relevance. Second thing is the overlap between the brand and the category. What is the thing that you do that nobody else does in the category? Oh, we got five people. We're only female plumbers. Mm. We love the color pink. Whatever your thing is, what do you do that nobody else does? And you might need to dial up that brand difference.
Can we talk about that for a second? I think that idea is something that I see better understood in different industries, which is, you know, they call it different things: a compelling offer, a unique selling proposition.
Yep.
Whatever. This is the thing that only we do. And we've clicked in on this on other episodes and talked about it a bit. But if you're this is a really like sincere question. If you're a painting contractor and you're like, well, I actually don't know. Like we put the same paint on the walls. We put relatively the same. We use the same rollers and sprayers. We have a warranty like the other guys. Like I don't. I'd be faking it wrong to tell you that I have to, you know, this is like the unique thing that we're known for. This is our trademark thing. Is there a bit of advice that you would give someone in that situation to either, I don't know, fake it more easily or actually go through and find something or build something about them that is unique?
Yeah. So there's two things I think that you can do with that. One, first of all, the realization that if there is no difference, then why should I pick you? Like it is just going to be a commodity. Now, there are two things that you can do. One is kind of manufacture a difference. This is pure marketing. And the other is to really embrace who you are. So on the second point, embracing who you are, what do you have that nobody else has? You. You got the owner of the business. Mm. Like that's one person. Like only we've got Gary, only we've got Barb, whoever it is. And can you extend the uniqueness of the business and tie it to the personality of the human being? Whether they're directly doing the plumbing or not, that it's like only we have this. Mm-hmm. Or is it we're the only ones in this neighborhood. Like we have a local feel. So you can use geography to your example. The other way that you can do this is you manufacture it with something that my friend Jay Baer calls talk triggers. Now, a talk trigger, this is a perfect example of a talk trigger. If you notice the shirt I'm wearing, mm-hmm. a beautiful shirt, not sponsored by the fine folks in Calgary, although I would, it's a great hat. So if they send me one, I'll wear it. I am known for wearing gingham shirts.
That's your thing.
It's not like it's authentically my thing. I love wearing gingham shirts. I have nothing else in my wardrobe. No word of a lie. For dress, this is all I wear. My wife hates
it. I'm sure.
It.
Yeah.
People will say, oh, you're the gingham guy.
Mm.
And that is a talk trigger. When people go like, oh, you're the guy that does the thing. Just like when like Benihana came out, right? Like they were the first round. Oh, you're the ones that chop up the food in front of me. No, we didn't know if the food was any better or not. They were the only ones that delivered it in that way. So you can create talk triggers. We're the ones that give you an apple. Right. You know, like there are hotels that when you go into the hotel, I'm trying to think of the warm cookies.
I think it's a Hilton thing.
Yeah, it's a Hill thing, right? Yeah. Where it's like, only we gave you the warm cookies. Mm-hmm. That's not really a huge difference in somebody booking a $400 hotel room, a 10-cent cookie.
Yeah, but people notice. It's a trigger. Yeah, they remember.
So, yeah, so you can manufacture it.
That's a very honest answer, and I like how you use the word manufacture, because the reality is, I think for a lot of our listeners, they actually do have to manufacture it. You have to go to the whiteboard and go, can we do anything? Look, yes, we have great workers. We follow best practices. We have insurance. We follow safety rules. But look, there's 10 other businesses in town that do that.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's be intellectually honest with ourselves and not say that's true. What can we look at? And you're kind of squinting at things. You're going, maybe there's an angle on warranty. Maybe we wrap our trucks in pink. Maybe we create a really cool infographic and do a great explainer videos on our website, so it's a visual sale and people feel really, really clear and they understand the process before they buy. Maybe we do something creative with financing, like whatever. You're going to have to work harder for the angles. Speaking of getting into the corners, you're gonna have to really dig this out of the corners more than you would in other industries. And that's just the nature of being a contractor or home service provider. And I think I'm happy with that answer. When we look at sort of like coming out of the think section, what's like the output here? Is it a mission statement? Is it I think in your book you talk a lot about the idea of a brand belief. Like, what's the
brand
thing?
Belief. Okay. Yeah. So once you've got brand relevance, brand difference, brand opportunity, what is nobody in the category, including us, doing? What's an opportunity here? No one's got an app. Okay, we're going to develop an app. No one's got a money-back guarantee. Okay, we're going to develop a money-back guarantee. So what is the thing? So your relevance you should protect, your difference you should dial up, and your opportunity you should pursue. That spits out a brand belief. What do you fundamentally, or doesn't spit it out, but it informs a brand belief. Now, sadly, there's no way to go shift F5. Oh, there, it spit out our brand belief.
Right.
So it is a bit of a creative exercise. So that's the think part. What do you fundamentally, we believe that blank. The second part is the do part, which is, what do you do to reinforce that belief? Back to our plumber example, the plumber says, based on all these outside forces, we believe that the best plumber is the plumber that's on time. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the best customer experience, is a plumber that's on time. Great, that's what you fundamentally believe. What do you do to reinforce that belief? And here's a line of that we use called an essential do that you can write. We believe this, so we do this by doing this.
Love that.
We believe the best customer experience is an on-time plumber. So we show up 15 minutes early for every appointment by scheduling in 45-minute travel time between appointments. We have, a custom software that reminds us on our phones. We have alarms that go. We have hard stops on all appointments. Like, what do you do to reinforce this fundamental belief? Mm-hmm. We believe this, so we do this by doing this. Now you've got some meat on the bone. Now you're not just talking about these nice beliefs. You are prioritizing the actions of your organization and your people to deliver on them.
You're walking the walk, so to speak.
You're walking the walk. And
there was this thing I saw. I can't remember if it was from the book or from a video I watched of you, but I like the words. And you called it an organizational action audit. Does that ring a bell?
Mm-hmm.
What is that? And how does that fit into the do part?
So the action audit is like, what are all the actions that we do? And you can, some people call the analysis of a customer journey map. So here's what you get. You go, okay, if we're the on-time plumber, this is how we do it. We go, where are people finding us? They're doing a Google search. Okay, what happens when they search plumbers? Do we come up? Have we bought that term? Because if we want to save them time, we should be saving them time in their search to make it as easy as possible. Okay, they search us. Okay, then what happens? Okay, they go to our website. What do they see? How can we save them time? Do we have a one click to order that will save, instead of them going around 800 clicks? How do I save them time there? Okay, one click to order. They've booked a time. How do I send a reminder? Do I give them a calendar entry that they can input right into their calendar with all the details and my number and everything else in there? So that's the audit, is you just go through a journey map of all of the touch points that you and your people have with your customer. And at each touch point, how can you deliver on your brand belief?
this section feels like where the real work begins, like where the real, like the rubber meets the road from a business owner's perspective, because you have to actually do it.
Yeah, yeah. This is the toughest. It should be the longest. And it's the thing that all the other, the think part and the say part, you can outsource that, right? You can outsource that, get people to help you. But this is on you.
Do you have a, I don't know, a quip or a thought on businesses that sort of skip this middle section? I mean, because there's a lot of that, man. Like, there's a lot of people that skip the do. They're big on the vision. They're big on the statements. They're big on the bold promises. And in reality, if you ask someone on the team, they go, yeah, like, look, those words on the wall, we just walk past them every day and they don't really mean anything to us.
Yeah.
What, like,
and often it comes with values. And the line I like to use there is that people shouldn't read your values. They should experience your values.
Yeah.
They experience your values through the actions of your people. So if you only say, we believe in being on time, but you're not, then you just wasted the time of going through the exercise of writing them. And you elevated expectations. So it's even worse.
Totally.
Because you told them we believe in being on time. Yeah. So it's even worse had you not said anything at all.
So carry on. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. Yeah. So yeah, they shouldn't read your values. They should experience your values. That's where the difference in your business comes in.
So in the say section, it feels like this is where we sort of bring this all together and turn some of the foundational brand beliefs that which we've figured out for ourselves and then created systems and built a team to carry them out. Now it's sort of time to talk about that in a way that's the most compelling, the most honest, and hopefully the most results driving. So how do we then bring all this sort of subterranean work to see the light of day and get out there in the world?
So the first thing is the realization that true growth comes when other people adopt your ideas. So you can go, yeah, I believe in being the best on-time plumber. And if they go, what? And not important to me. Or I didn't hear that. Or I didn't understand that. What do you mean? Or I didn't even see that. Well, they're not going to join you. They're not going to book your business. They're not going to want to get hired by you. So growth comes when other people adopt your ideas and passions. And that occurs when you communicate them in a really interesting and relevant way. So this idea of communication is critically important. How do you talk about it? Now, you have to talk it about in a way that's relevant enough, that's meaningful enough, that's timely enough, that's interesting enough, that's helpful enough. And you can go on and on and on. Mm-hmm. Because if my toilet breaks and I got, you know, water spewing all over the floor, I want somebody who's going to communicate in a really timely way. Mm-hmm. I want, you know, I'm not interested in somebody who's going to give me a white paper on how to fix my own toilet. Mm-hmm. So the timeliness is really critical. So the say part, you can just break it down into what do we say? How do we say it? Where do we say it? When do we say it? So the what do we say? You fundamentally say what you believe and how you reinforce that belief. So the easy way is like, well, how do you say it from the name of your company? What's the name of your company? If it's Jim Bob and Sons Plumbing, that does not connect with the fundamental belief of being on time. Mm-hmm. And maybe you don't have to because you have a legacy business and this business, it's a well-known brand, yada, yada, yada. But if you're a new business and this is your unique difference, then you might want that in the brand name. Quick Zip Plumbers, you know, round the clock plumbers, by the second plumbers, whatever. You're reinforcing this belief. So what do you say? You say what you believe and how you reinforce that belief through your actions. When do you say it? Well, that's a calendar. That's a content calendar. So when are you saying it? Are you finding that people are looking at kind of home renovations on Friday mornings when they have time? Is that when you should be communicating with them? When are they kind of looking for stuff? Is it more random than that? Well, then you should be starting out with a test and learn model where like, look at this. People in Leaside, they look at this Facebook group on Tuesday mornings. That's where the most traffic is. So when do you say it? Where do you say it is where are they looking for information? And it's not just one place. They're looking all over the place. But do you have SEO? Do you have search? Because we know that people are going to search. I say that with a full disclosure that Google is our client. Mm-hmm. But are they also on Facebook? Are they on TikTok? Like, where are they? And where are you going to prioritize? Because if they're on 50 spaces and platforms, you can't be on all 50. So what's natural for you? What has worked in the past? Where's the performance data telling you that you get still a lot of calls from Yellow Pages or whatever? So what's working for you? How do you say it? Well, this is all about tone. And are you, if you're efficient and on time, that's your fundamental belief, then you should be efficient with your messaging. The tone should be direct and emphatic and confident. That's what an on time, they're not wasting around with flowery language and run on sentences. They're direct and to the point because they want to save you time. Now, if I'm a premium plumber, wow, now I'm going to use different language.
Right.
Right? Like now the language and the tone of that should fulfill my brand belief. And when you do that, suddenly you have a vehicle that can be a talk trigger or a unique difference in the market because you're the only one that talks like that. You know, when Wealth Simple came out and they were going up against the big banks.
Oh, my God. Can I just say something? First of all, their ads, I'm getting tired of them. But those guys, I've talked about Wealth Simple for like 3 years. I'm like, these guys are absolutely crushing it from an advertising perspective. I think they're absolutely like – Questrade's done a pretty good job too. But some of these more like disrupting financial robo-banking type things, I just have been so impressed with the angles they're finding and the narrative they're weaving. Whether you use them or not, it's as an advertiser, it's something that's pretty interesting.
The Questrade and the Wealthsimple example, those are great examples for two different reasons. Wealthsimple, all the banks were using the same language, right? Nobody was having an honest conversation about money. And sometimes money sucks.
Yeah.
Sometimes money is stressful. Sometimes money makes us feel stupid, right? Like, and nobody was having those conversations about money except Wealthsimple. Questrade, this is the example. I think, and I have no experience with that brand, but I do know that there was some research that came out where those people with advisors end up with 30% more revenue than those without.
That's right. Yeah, over a 30-year career invested over 30 in such year a career, way.
You're going to have 30% more right. revenue that's in their, your portfolio that's their pitch. If you have an advisor.
That's their pitch, yeah.
So Wealth or Questrade is what are you paying in fees and commissions? That is a short-term view on an individual's wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually not true over the long haul.
I think that's why I think that's why I'm finding them annoying now. Like I'm like, yeah. The first time I was like, oh, that's a spicy angle. And now I'm like, you know, I know. And I feel guilty because I work with an advisor and like, you don't still work with dad's advisor, do you? And I'm like, oh man, this is going straight at me. Anyway,
yeah,
those are some good examples I think out there in the world that's sort of concurrent. And we've probably all seen those ads. I know we're almost out of time here. I want to sort of bring this to a close. This is striking me as a much simpler way, going back to what you said earlier, we're not getting into mission statements, core values, painted pictures, and 20 other things to sort of quote unquote bring together a brand narrative or a mission. This is a little cleaner. And the idea is you have foundational, fundamental beliefs that you hold and also follow through on in your business. And then you talk about those in an effective way that people can connect with. So it seems simple. I realize it's a little harder than that in reality. But I want you to talk about the impact that you've seen with the businesses that you've worked with. When this is done really well, what impact does this have on company culture? What impact does this have on recruiting efforts if we're trying to go get talent? What does it have on our brand messaging overall? And what does it have on our marketing effectiveness? That's kind of a loaded question, but if you can just unpack sort of the benefits of this, I think that would be a really nice kind of landing for us.
Yeah. Now, one is I think the we've done it from, again, from an individual, you know, person, one person who's a thought leader, we did an Olympian, we did CEOs. So individual thought leaders and personal brands, all the way up to the largest organizations in the world. And what people like is the simplicity of it. So they like that it's really simple, while at the same time having a foundation of complexity that you know, we're working with a post-secondary institution right now, and we're talking about the target of learners. Like, well, learners are, it's such a wide spectrum of people, and all learners are unique and different. So it allows them to be really simple, but really complex and at the same time. So from a cultural standpoint, what we've seen is that individuals in the front line are like, oh, now I get it. Mm. Now I get what I should fundamentally believe in. And most importantly, I understand the individual and personal role that I can play in bringing it to life. Mm. And we've literally done that. Well, we've just said, we've gone to people and said, this is the brand belief for the organization. What do you fundamentally believe your role is in bringing it to life? And we'll say, you know, there are a lot of organizations, including all of your listeners, who are hopefully really focused on something we call CX. CX is customer experience. And customer experience isn't customer service. It's customer experience. If I'm the online plumber, a great customer experience is quick loading website, one click to order or book my time, blah, 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 all that. Everyone's focused on CX, but CX is impossible without EX, without an employee experience, and without people who are driven to deliver that customer experience, who are informed with what they're supposed to do so that that customer experience is fantastic. And to all of your listeners, those of you who have a large body of people who aren't on the payroll, but who may come in to help you from time to time, be it other trades, or if you're a renovator or contractor and you have real estate agents you work with or mortgage brokers, there are people who allow us to do the thing that we do. So who we do it with. And for those people, it's really simple to get them on side so that their behavior is consistent as well. Mm-hmm. So inside the organization, people love the simplicity. It builds culture because now culture, you know, Roger Martin's got a great definition of it, which is culture is the inner playbook that says, this is how we do things around here. That's what culture is. Mm-hmm. And when you simplify the inputs to that culture, you have a greater adherence to the culture and you have greater alignment with that culture. When you have greater alignment within an organization, now you're using more of your power. All your people are focused, you know, all rowing in the same direction, to use that tired cliche.
Yeah.
But when we are all rowing in the same direction, you know, we can perform better and we can be more nimble and more agile to change on the spot. From a communication standpoint and a branding perspective, what has been great is that we suddenly removed that we're here to save the planet thing, where people just want to jump to the say and go, but it's just about saving the planet. We're like, that's bullshit. It's not about saving the planet because you sell a cracker or you're a plumber. I'm sorry. That's not what you should believe in, something to do with where you make your money. And so we've eliminated that BS that consumers are getting really exhausted by. We've focused the message. And by isolating the say, we've put more pressure on ourselves to go, no, but what's a better way to say it? Like, what's a more interesting way to say it? What's a clearer way to say it? What's a more direct way to say it? And so the result is marketing that is infused with pillars of the business, opposed to just a bunch of marketers making fancy commercials.
As you talk through that, something has dawned on me, which is I think that this whole exercise is actually more about, like, you're looking after the internal messaging, like what's said and what's believed inside the building, and then what happens outside the building in a way almost looks after itself, right? Like, if you have rowing in the same direction, we're all aligned, right seats on the right bus, whatever. We can use as many cliches as we want, but you have a you have a central narrative that ties your stakeholders, so those are your employees, your customers, your sub trades, whatever, on a thing, and by virtue of that united nature, a lot of the messaging that you then go and do outside the building, whether that be on your Instagram or your website or in a sales meeting, is sort of handled in large part for you because you're so clear inside the building. Is that sort of too simplistic a way to look at it, or is that largely how this works?
That's how it works.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Cool. I love that. It's a really nice recipe, to get cohesive as a unit. So listen, I know we're out of time here, but just if people like are you a good LinkedIn follow? Where should people go buy your book? Like what's your
digital
footprint?
Follow me on LinkedIn. I would share 3 posts a day.
Okay. You're active.
Very active on LinkedIn.
Okay. So we will link Ron's stuff below. Ron, I really appreciate the time put into this. I love the book, and you keep going and doing your thing out there in the world. And let's stay in touch.
Awesome. Thanks, Benji. And thanks for everybody for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our channel, consider sharing this episode with another contractor who you think needs to hear it.